Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Ashley Lang broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road with Straight Talk.
Selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road, across the street from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And thanks to our co-sponsor today, that's Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. We also want to thank Piedmont Medical Center. That's a community built on care. And you can find out more about them at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. And my guest today for Straight Talk is no stranger to the microphones with WRHI. So we're glad to have you back. It's Melissa Carlisle. She is the executive director of the South Carolina Catawba Area Coalition on Homelessness. So thank you for being here, Melissa.
Yeah, thanks for having
me, Ashley.
That's
a long title.
It is.
I think I got it. So Melissa, if you would first just tell our listeners a little bit about you and how you got into the work here.
Yeah, so my parents were actually social workers at DSS, so I guess I was born into it a little bit. I said no to it for a very, very long time, but I think in the back of my mind, I just always knew I wanted to give back to this community and to the people who have been underserved traditionally. I found my way here. I graduated with my MSW from Winthrop just a little over a year ago. I guess 2 years ago now. Time flies. And I've been in this space ever since.
How does work look at the South Carolina Catawba Area Coalition of Homelessness? Like, what does that look like for you on a daily basis? And maybe it's different every day.
Yeah. So I'm going to help you out first of all. Okay. We do typically use an acronym.
And let's tell the listeners what that is.
So our acronym is CASH. Okay. So way easier than giving the whole long name.
And it's not spelled with an S, but with C-A-C-H.
So at CASH, the Catawba Area Coalition for the Homeless, we really work to reduce the duration of time individuals and families experience homelessness within Chester, Lancaster, and York counties. So we serve the tri-county area, and we really do this in two different ways. First, there's system access, and then there's system improvement. So on the system access side, we try to just ensure that our homeless response system is accessible to those who need it. So if you're an individual, if you're a family who's at risk of homelessness, or if you're someone who's already experiencing homelessness, we work to make the amazing services we have more accessible to those individuals and households. So we do this by distributing educational materials. We have signs throughout the community that people can scan the QR code, go to our website, see the list of resources in the area. We have a pocket guide with the list of all the food banks and food pantries and shelters and healthcare partners that we give out like candy, like truly on the streets everywhere we can.
Well, So do you go out and hand out the materials? How do they find you? How do you find them?
Yeah, we actually have an outreach team. So we have an amazing outreach coordinator, Chassie Hunter. She used to work with the Salvation Army. Now she's with us. But she actually partners with local organizations and literally brings the services out to clients. Mm. So that is one way we work to make the system more accessible for all. So they'll go to encampment sites. They go to the York County Library. They go out to the Clover Area Assistance Center. Really just doing everything we can to make sure people in need know how to access the help and services that they require. And then on the other end, the system improvement side, we really just work to improve our homeless response system. We do this by implementing evidence-based solutions to homelessness. We do gaps analysis. We advocate at the state and local levels for more funding and resources going into our homeless response system. And then obviously the affordable housing conversation is a huge part in all of this, of just advocating for more affordable, accessible housing for low to moderate households.
So we all know that, you know, affordable housing is a crisis, not just here in Rock Hill or in our state, but really across our nation. What is that looking like? Are you seeing the trends of it coming down, going up? What can we expect in the future?
Yeah, so I think things are really expensive, and they're going to be expensive for a really long time. We listen to a ton of podcasts, read a lot of articles. We really turn to the experts on this one, and they are telling us that a lot of this is a supply chain issue. Okay. It's also a demand issue, right? We have a ton of people that are moving to this area that can afford pricier homes. Well, many of our clients in the population we serve, they've been in this community for a really, really long time, and they just have been priced out because their wages aren't keeping up. So we have to talk about affordable housing, but we got to talk about the wage piece too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, housing is going to continue to get more and more expensive. We want to see people's wages uptick with that as well.
And with that, with the housing going up, that means that the rent is now going to be able to go up too, which is where a lot of your clients, that's probably the area that they fall. Are you seeing
absolutely.
That as well?
Yeah. I mean, we've had clients come to us and say, my rent has increased by 100%. And it's like, 100%? That's crazy. Mm-hmm. But it is, especially when you think about people that are on a fixed income, people with disabling conditions, their fixed income is not increasing. We see a ton of older adults that have an SSI check or an SSDI check. They're getting maybe $1,000 a month. Well, their rent is $1,200 a month. That's just their rent. So how are they supposed to use $1,000 to pay their rent, pay for food, pay for gas, and all the things that they need? It's just truly impossible.
Yeah. And I think this brings us to a good place. I want to get into the funding. I know that's a huge piece. But I think, you know, we live in a world sometimes it's a little crass. It's a little callous. We sometimes have lost our empathy and our sympathy to things. And we do see this as a problem. I mean, we know it's a problem, but how can we as a community have empathy but not be a part of enabling people? Or, you know, what do we say to business owners where encampments are, you know, now on their properties or, you know, in the backs of their restaurants? What can we do as a community? What advice do you give us as community stakeholders to be able to help combat that? And then what can we do from the community to be able to help you guys?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes back to that community engagement piece. So some of community engagement is just being informed, being involved, staying in the know about what's going on. So make sure that you're engaging with our local service providers, whether it be CASH, Bethel Shelters, the Lifehouse. We see a ton of people that have misconceptions about those experiencing homelessness. Usually those misconceptions are immediately put to rest as soon as they volunteer at one of our shelters and actually get to talk to people who are experiencing homelessness. So that's one way, is just being engaged, you know, volunteering. But I think another way is just thinking about the relational piece. We are all people. And I think too often we think of this as being a zero-sum game. Like, for me to do great, you have to do not so great. And we often profit off of people's misfortune. And I think just looking to your neighbor, whether they have a home or not, and just being friendly. I'm not telling you to give people $5, $10 if they ask for it, but you can extend a smile, you know. You can, I think you can still be empathetic without being enabling. And instead of giving that money to the individual, if you don't feel comfortable with that, I mean, you could always just donate to the organizations like ours who are working to end homelessness in our region.
What are some of those misconceptions? I know a lot of times we hear that everyone who is experiencing homelessness is on drugs, or they have some kind of substance abuse problem, or maybe they're criminals. Yeah. So is that a misconception? What would you say to combat that?
Yeah, it definitely is a misconception, especially when you think about that addiction piece. People who have homes also experience addiction, substance use disorders. I think it's just more noticeable when we have clients who are chronically homeless, who have been on the streets for a long time, that may be using, abusing drugs, and also have a mental health issue. But we don't have a wealth of mental health resources in our community. That is a systemic issue we need to focus on and solve. But we do find only 10 to 15% of the individuals we serve actually report having a substance use disorder. So it's not as common as people think it is. I'm not saying it's not there and that it doesn't impact some of those people that we serve, but it definitely is the minority and not the majority.
Okay.
I think another misconception we often hear is that people experiencing homelessness are lazy. Many of the clients we serve have a job or are actively looking for jobs. Many of them have multiple jobs. We serve a lot of single parent households who are working, also trying to get their kids to childcare, get them to school. Some of them don't have vehicles. These people are not lazy. They're actually the opposite. I promise you, the majority of the people we serve are working harder than all of us just to survive, and they don't know where they're sleeping at night. And that really is, I think, a tragedy for our community.
And I know that part of what you do every year, I know you do it at least once, maybe twice, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is what you call the cash count. And so you go out in groups of volunteers and you train volunteers, and this is of course done with law enforcement as well, so it's a safe process, and you actually talk to people who are experiencing homelessness, whether that's alone just on the street or in an encampment. Are these some of those questions that you're asking them, and how do we kind of get data to figure out how to help these folks?
Yeah, so we actually counted 291 people this last January during the PIT count. So we got into contact with a lot of folks who were experiencing homelessness and those who were at risk of homelessness. And we do, we ask about employment history. We ask if you're currently employed. If so, are you employed part-time, full-time? We ask about last permanent address. And the reason we do that is because another misconception is that the majority of folks experiencing homelessness are actually not from this community. They came to Rock Hill because we have a Pathways Community Center, because we have such great services. And that just really isn't the case. The majority of people we serve lived in Rock Hill, lived in the York County area prior to experiencing homelessness. And then we ask about addictions. We ask about disabling conditions. So we do actually find a lot of the people we serve do have some sort of disabling condition. Okay. It's not always a substance use disorder, but we have folks with mental health disorders, folks with physical disabilities that impact the type of work they can do, and developmental disorders, which again might limit their ability to actually go out and find a job in the job market.
What did those numbers look like? I know that you went out in January was the last time you did it. Are those numbers going up, coming down? Does it look encouraging?
Yeah, so we're actually seeing a decrease from January 2025. The previous year, we actually saw 10% more than what we saw this past January. So we've seen a 10% decrease. And I think a lot of that is because our homeless response system has become more focused on housing and implementing housing as the first attempt at resolving someone's issues. I think the traditional mindset was, we're going to make people get a job, we're going to make them pass a drug test before we're going to look at getting them into housing. We actually have flipped that. So we work to house people first, and then we work to address those other co-occurring issues. Because it's really hard to tell someone to get clean. It's really hard to tell someone to go out and get a job when they don't know where they're sleeping at night. And mind you, we never have enough shelter bed for everyone, especially families. So some of these folks are sleeping outside in these extreme heats that we've been having. They're sleeping outside when it's freezing. They have nowhere to shower, bathe, you know, clean their clothes. And you're asking them to walk miles and miles and miles to an interview site with all of their things and get a job, secure that job, walk to that job every single day, get a savings account, and do all of that without having safe, stable shelter over their head. So we really have started being more housing focused, and we've seen the results, and the results have been really positive thus far.
So that's what we're going to go ahead and get into. And all of that does take money and funding. Yes. So where does that funding come from? And I know it comes from quite a few different avenues and grants. So let's just kind of walk through what that looks like and what that money is now being poured into.
Yeah, so currently our organization uses several funding sources for our rental assistance programs. So we use the South Carolina Opioid Recovery Fund. So those funds are specifically for folks within our homeless response system that have a history of opioid use. And we use those funds to quickly house those individuals and provide case management, supportive services, and rental assistance for 12 months.
Okay.
We also get two different HUD federal funding grants. So we have the Continuum of Care COC grant that we utilize. We have the Emergency Solutions Grant, ESG. And then we also have a new grant opportunity that came our way, RUSH, the Rapid Unsheltered Housing, Rapid Unsheltered Survivor
Lots of
Housing
acronyms.
Grant. So many acronyms. But the RUSH funds actually came from Hurricane Helene. So that is a disaster response fund that we're now able to utilize for our rapid rehousing program.
And you said that that was actually a pretty big pretty big amount that has definitely helped.
Yeah, we have about $1 million in our community right now to spend from Rush. Now that's split among several agencies, but cash we have $250,000 we're using for our rapid rehousing program. The Housing Development Corporation that we partner closely with on this program also got $250,000.
So. And do you have to write these grants once a year? How long are the funds good for? Is there kind of a time limit? What does all of that look like?
So it's super complicated because they're all different. They all have very specific criteria that service providers have to meet, specific criteria that our clients have to meet. So it's all a little bit different. Typically, they run on a 12-month grant cycle. So a lot of these grants do renew year after year. We always have to reapply for them, but the ESG, COC, SCORE funds aren't really expected to go anywhere. I know we have some changes at the federal level, so we're still waiting to see kind of what that looks like, how it pans out. But the Rush funds in particular, those actually have to be spent by February of this year.
Okay.
So if you are listening and you have properties and you want to partner with us on this program, by all means, please reach out to us because we are looking to move up to 100 households into housing within the next 12 months to spend and utilize this funding.
And you talked before we went on air that you had two different programs. Mm-hmm. One is called Rapid Rehousing and one is now called Rapid Reset. What do those two programs look like or how do they now work together?
Yeah, so Rapid Rehousing is a program where we take individuals, families experiencing homelessness and we work to quickly transition them into housing. The way we do this is we provide housing navigation assistance. So we actually will contact landlords, property managers, work to schedule tours. We pay for moving costs. So we pay for application fees, security deposits.
All of the extras that kind of come with
all of moving. Expensive stuff that comes with signing a lease in the beginning. I mean, it can cost thousands of dollars to get keys mm-hmm. to a unit and move in.
Because
even if your rent's only $1,000 a month, you might
have to pay
$3,000.
Right, because you have to pay
start.
First and last. And,
exactly. Mm-hmm. It gets really, really expensive. And it's a really big barrier for a lot of the folks we serve. I think it would be a big barrier for the majority of folks within our community to pay those upfront costs. So we cover those upfront costs. And then for the Rapid Rehousing Program, we also provide 12 months of case management and rental assistance. Mm-hmm. With Rapid Reset, it's very similar. We do the housing navigation piece. We can provide moving costs. We just don't provide that ongoing rental assistance. So we really just pay for those upfront costs to help transition the household quickly.
All right. With that, we are going to go ahead and take our mid-program break. We want to remind everyone that you're listening to Straight Talk right here from Substation 2, Cherry Road, across the street from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. And Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy for 60 years, Camden Avenue at Ebenezer Road. And of course, what we do right here at Substation 2 is special. We do fresh subs and salads 6 days a week from 10 in the morning until 9 at night. And how we do it is right here on the t-shirt in the white letters. I'm going to count the three and we're all going to say it together. 1, 2, 3. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. We'll be right back with more.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
It's just always a great, consistent meal.
Enjoy the Italian sub with the salami.
I enjoy just the atmosphere.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
If your primary care physician has recommended surgery for a medical condition and non-invasive medical treatments are not an option, you may want to talk to your surgeon about new, less invasive surgical techniques. At Piedmont Medical Center, we use Da Vinci Robotic Surgery, a robot-assisted system controlled by a surgeon designed to allow for greater surgical precision during many general GYN and urology procedures that potentially offers you a quicker recovery. Learn more online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
Introducing two new high-speed internet options. Comporium has created two new levels of service that give you access to fast, reliable internet for a remarkably low monthly price. Whether you prefer the light or the essential plan, you can do everything you want online without spending too much. Prices start at $29.94 per month for light internet, and essential internet is under $50. Both plans offer fast internet and free virus protection. Call Comporium today to sign up. 833-619-1848.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
Love the bread. Number 19's the best.
Fresh, delicious bread.
It's fresh.
The food is really good, and it's a great price.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And we are back here live, Substation 2, Cherry Road, across the street from Winthrop. We're talking to Melissa Carlisle, who is the Executive Director of CASH. She told me that that was the quick acronym, but it does stand for the South Carolina Catawba Aerial Coalition on homelessness. So before we took our break, Melissa, we were talking a lot about CASH and the funding and how it all works with getting the clients and getting the word out to clients. Now what I kind of want to focus on is we hear a lot about the different programs that are here. So Pathways, we hear a lot about Pathways. We hear a lot about Bethel Shelters. We hear about Lifehouse. We hear, about Family Promise. The city programs that we have with housing, how do you all come together and work together? What's the synergy look like to make sure that that client is only maybe getting help from one place, or are those clients getting help from the different entities, and what that looks like? So kind of take us through what a client would do if they do need help and know that there's all of these choices.
Yeah, so it works through constant
communication. Sorry for the hard question.
It's okay. It works through constant communication.
Okay.
And also through something we call as wraparound services. So it's not just that this one person is going to go to one agency and get everything they need at that agency. That's not the most efficient way to do it. It's actually more efficient for all of these agencies to have some sort of specialty, something they specialize in. We wouldn't expect Dorothy Day's Soup Kitchen to also provide shelter and still be able to keep their amazing level of effort and care that they pay to their food service program.
You stay in your lane.
Need to duplicate services, but with that, we know clients have a variety of needs, so they're going to be in contact with multiple service providers. When it comes specifically to our homeless service providers, so our shelter partners, our transitional housing programs, and then organizations like ours and HDC that have more of that transition to permanent housing piece, it is monthly meetings. Actually, we typically meet 2 to 3 times a month with all of the case managers in the area, making sure we're all on the same page about these clients, that we're quickly transitioning clients from homelessness to housing. So we actually have monthly case manager meetings where we sit down and we go through a list of names of people in our community who are experiencing homelessness. Some of them may be staying at Bethel Shelter. Some of them might be at the Lifehouse. Some might be at Family Promise or the Haven Men Shelter. But we talk about each of them and we say, okay, what are the barriers to housing that this person has? How can we as a team collectively work to reduce their barriers? And do they qualify for one of these housing programs so that we can help expedite that process and transition them quicker into housing?
And then does one of y'all from the meeting go and meet with the client one-on-one and kind of walk alongside? What does that look like?
Yeah, so typically if they're at the shelter, they have a case manager they can reach out to at the shelter. If it's a client who we see might qualify for one of our programs, we have someone on staff who will reach out to that person directly, and we get them onboarded into our program. But it gets even more complicated and more intertwined because our organization also sub-grants to some of these shelter programs because we thought about it and we're like, you know, these clients are pretty comfortable and familiar with these partners at the shelter. Let's take a Bethel client, for example. He's been staying at Bethel for several months. He's maybe built a really great relationship with Alicia, Brooke, or Dom, one of the case managers over at Bethel already. If we onboard him into our rapid rehousing program, it would be really, really cool if he could keep his same case manager. So we're not introducing him to someone new that he hasn't built rapport with, might not be able to trust right away. He's getting to kind of keep his case manager, and that case manager is now getting to see that person from the unsheltered to the sheltered to the housed, which is really cool for our service providers as well.
Well, and that brings me into the next question. Share with us some success stories. I know that, you know, we see it, you know, it's people just think that it's an ongoing problem. It's never going to stop. But there are some success stories.
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of success stories. We actually have a client in our rapid rehousing program now who has successfully launched their new business. So they are now a business owner.
Wow.
We have another client who is on track to purchase a home and is actually looking into some of the home buyer classes and programs in the area. We have a single mom who is going through and getting her bachelor's degree and now is making enough money to sustain rent on her own, free of programmatic support. We have two clients actually who were unsheltered. They were actually sleeping at their work site, so they were working full time, but just couldn't afford housing, couldn't afford to make that transition from homelessness to housing. They were unsheltered, and now they're in housing placements, and they're doing really, really well. So those are just the few that come to mind.
Those are all great.
It's so many. Like, we've seen so much success through these programs and through these partnerships.
And do the case managers stay with them for a little bit after, like, once you kind of get them to the next level or to the next place, do those case managers stay with them just to make sure that they're still kind of stable and make sure, like, how do they kind of graduate out, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, so actually our grants allow for case management to continue up to 6 months after the program ends.
Okay.
So say we pay for the first 12 months or we provide rental assistance for the first 12 months that client's in their unit, we can then offer case management services for 6 months following the end of the rental assistance.
So you're not just saying, okay, you're done, 12 months is up.
Never. And even after that 6 month period, we still know that if clients reach out to us, we're going to do everything we can to help them, get them connected to the supportive services they need. We certainly don't want to be a crutch for anyone. There is a level of accountability that has to be on the individual and the household we serve. So we very much try to teach people how to fish instead of fishing for them.
Right.
But no, we are always around for those that are in need that have gone through our program.
Do you ever see any come back and volunteer or help people who were in the same place that they were just months ago?
Yes, we've seen that. And we've seen a ton of volunteers, but we've also seen some people that are actually interested in serving on a board level as well.
That's awesome.
So actually looking to engage some of these previous clients and onboard them as board members of our organization or some of the other organizations we partner with.
So we are, this went by fast. I told you that it always goes by too fast. But what do people need to do if they are interested in either getting involved as a volunteer or if they want to donate? What's the best way for people to be able to do that and to find you?
So probably the easiest thing to do is to actually just go to our website, www.sccach.org. When you go there, you'll see a big pop-up that happens. That lightning box is super important. It tells you two ways that you can get involved with our rapid rehousing program, either through donating funds to help support the cost of the program or donating furniture to help with the actual transition from homelessness to housing. Many of these folks don't have furniture because they've been staying at the shelter. They've been sleeping outside. So we want to make this house feel like a home for them as soon as possible.
And that's another added big expense.
Yeah, absolutely. Furniture is super expensive. Like, think about just the cost of a mattress alone and how much that is. So we take furniture donations always. So there is a link on our website where you can go and put in a furniture donor request, and we will actually pick up those furniture items for
better.
You free of charge. So those are two ways you can get involved. And then our contact information is also on our website too, if you want to learn more and reach out to us.
Would you say the biggest need right now is monetary, or is it volunteers? Is it what is the biggest need right now?
Biggest need in this exact moment is furniture. So if you have any furniture you can donate, that would be the first thing to do. And then after that, always monetary donations. They really help. These are expensive programs to run. They're really cost-effective programs. They're important programs. But it does take a lot of staff time and funding to make these programs work. So monetary donations are always welcome.
All right. Well, Melissa, that was perfect. That was right. I'm hearing my music. So that was a perfect ending. Thank you for all that you do for Cash and for our community. And with that, we are going to end the program. Thanks for being here. Straight Talk is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. And one more time, we're going to let everyone know what we do here at Substation 2 that makes us special. On the count of three, we're going to say it. One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Have a great weekend. See you on the radio Monday. Bye.